This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. That's a nice start to the week. Too bad we couldn't get all the way back to Friday's highs. But hey, rallies of 30 cents in beans, a dime in corn, 14 cents in wheat. That got a lot of Friday's losses back, and most of the livestock contracts even pushed to the upside. Are the markets building upside momentum, or is there more choppy price action coming our way?
Live from Before the Flakes via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Sam Hudson from Corn Belt Marketing. In the final segment, bunker up, America, for the Artac attack. Kerry Artac stops by. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you, buddy. Has the snow arrived at your locale?
Not just yet. I want to say there were a couple flakes a little earlier.
No, I was talking about the snow.
It might have been dandruff, yeah.
Oh, wow. Sometimes when you start saying things, you think to yourself, no, don't. Then it's just too late.
Yes.
Just too late. How you doing, man? Everything good?
Everything's great. Everything's really great. Really great.
Awesome.
How about you?
Awesome. Real good. Real good.
No snow yet then, I guess?
No.
I'm assuming?
Nope, no, not yet. Not yet. Okay. Radar says it's here. But if it is, it is... it's kind of invisible. It's not really happening to the outside the bunker. Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay. It's starting to feel like 5 o'clock Charlie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But you go out to the west into eastern Nebraska, western Iowa.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah. Some of these snowfall totals are running a little ahead of what they anticipated already.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be one of those big ones.
Well, and I haven't heard from Farmer Bob. He tweeted in to hashtag AgriTalk earlier this morning saying that it was starting up there.
Yep.
And I advised he get to the barrel right away. You know, get in your safety barrel. I don't know if he made it or not. I haven't heard from him.
Are you calling Bob a clown, some sort of a rodeo clown?
I'm just saying, you know. In certain situations, you got to do what you got to do. Clown or not, get in the barrel. You know, sometimes you just got to do that.
Oh, I love it. All right. It was a good start to the week. I don't want to get too excited about it, but it was a good start to the week. We'll see what Jack has to say about it coming up here in just a little bit. And we'll talk to Sam about what it means for the markets going forward and what you should all be thinking about doing after today's rallies in the grain markets. All right,
very
man,
good.
Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, export inspections of wheat in the weekend of January 21 totaled nearly 524,000 metric tons, easily topping trade expectations. That helped to support wheat prices, but much of the price gain was driven by a lack of selling, which was swept out of the market by ongoing speculation that flows of wheat out of the Black Sea region will be restricted starting next month. Technically, March soft red wheat futures spiked support at the January low of 628 and three quarters, which basically exhausted selling interest. The contract then rallied back to test resistance at the pivotal 650 level. July HRW wheat 12 and a half cents higher, 629 and a quarter. July soft red jumped 9 3/4 to 633 and three quarters. September spring wheat 14 cents higher, 626 and one half. Chip.
Yeah, not a lot of fundamental reason for the move in the markets today, at least not that I saw. We'll find out what Jack and Sam have got to say here in just a little bit.
Corn export inspections topped trade expectations and totaled more than 1.39 million metric tons. Some traders were looking for a fundamental reason for the rally in corn prices, but most agree profit-taking interest was exhausted by the nearly 50-cent setback from the January 13 price high. The relative strength index in March corn topped at 83.3 on Jan 14 and was outside of overbought territory at 61.5 on Friday's close. Mm-hmm. Traders say the expanded space on the long side of the corn market should encourage fund buying this week. March corn futures 11 cents higher, 5.11 and a half. May corn 11 and a quarter cents higher, 5.14 and one quarter. December corn closed at 4.34 and three quarters, up 4.5 cents. Let's corn conga anyway, baby.
Yeah, I like it. That correction of the overbought condition in that corn market was so important. It got us back into neutral territory. And I know we'll talk with Sam about the fund positioning here in just a little bit, but it opened up some space. It gives the specs and an opportunity to now add back those long positions.
Soybean export inspections of 1.98 million metric tons were in line with trade expectations and were strong enough to slow down selling interest. Weekend weather in South America was generally as expected, with good rains in northern Brazil and southeastern Argentina. The forecast calls for dry areas in eastern Brazil and northwestern Argentina to see some much-needed rains over the next 2 weeks, but the weather forecast was not, quote, bearish enough to encourage additional long liquidation. Come on, beans. March beans, 31 and three-quarter cents higher, 13.43 and a half. May beans up 31 cents, 13.42 and three-quarters. November bean futures closed at 11.30 and a quarter, up 18 and one quarter cents on the day. Talk about a roller coaster ride, Chip.
Yeah, I'm listening to the roundup of the South American weather conditions there, and they're all supportive for yields, but it really didn't matter to that market today, which just it feels like evidence that today wasn't really a fundamentally based day of trade. It was chart-based. It was momentum flow. It was money flow kind of a day.
All right, fair enough. Well, March cotton 77 points higher, 82.33. December cotton firmed 41 points to 78.88. Hey, you want to talk to Jack quick, and then we'll do the livestocks later?
Sounds great to me. Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, I'm having a good time. Markets are good. Back up, what can I say?
yep, markets are back up. But, Jack, it feels like maybe the quote-unquote easy part of this rally in the grain markets is behind us, and it's going to be a little tougher going from now on.
Well, that could be. I still think there's upside potential. I still think we got some new highs coming, but we may have some more back and forth here before we finally make it to that promised land.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it? I mean, you've seen it enough, Jack, that markets, when you get to this point, there has to be some give and take if you're going to continue to march this thing to the upside.
Well, you do. And, the sell-off that we had last week did not feel like we'd made a blow-off top and we were collapsing or anything like that. Granted, it was a pretty huge down move. But when you look at the overall scheme of things, you know, we took a dollar off the beans. Well, we rallied three with very little let-up. And we took 50 cents off the corn. Well, we rallied more than a dollar in the corn with very little let-up. So to get some type of corrective trade activity, as dramatic as it was last week, should have been expected.
Right. What are you watching most closely this week, Jack?
Well, I am going to keep an eye on the weather down in South America, although we don't really seem to care. We really didn't care too much today anyway. But I think that that's going to be important. And I think the harvest progress out of Brazil with the soybeans is going to be very important. Just because they have started harvesting, I guess they're still a little less than 3% done. But it's going to be a very slow grind here, at least for the first part of the crop, due to the delayed plantings. And the longer that we can keep our export business together, the better off our markets are going to be.
Yeah, another good round of export inspections for soybeans in the latest reporting period. All right, Jack, great stuff, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Great, thank you.
All right, thank you. That's Jack Scoville from Price Futures Group. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing, right here on AgriTalk. You know weeds can impact potential corn yields, but how do you measure it? I'm joined today by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, tell us a little bit about the relationship between weeds and yields.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chip. Essentially, immediately after you plant, your corn's yield potential is at its absolute highest. And then you start to get these environmental stressors immediately after you plant that reduce that yield potential. So higher yield potential really starts with early season weed control. Because once the weed emerges, it steals vital nutrients and water, among other things that are needed for corn growth and grain fill.
Okay, so these weeds that emerge with the corn plant, how does it impact the health of the plant?
Well, early season weeds fundamentally alter corn growth, health, and eventually its potential yield. So weeds present at corn emergence are an immediate source of stress and cause corn to enact a series of defensive measures. These will include things like corn stalks growing taller and leaves growing wider, and that's to better compete for sunlight. The corn leaves grow parallel to the row versus out into the row to avoid competing directly for sunlight. All of these things are really irreversible, and they're going to have a negative impact on the yield overall.
Okay, so for corn growers that are looking to control those tough weeds, maximize yield potential, what herbicide do you recommend?
Only Acuron corn herbicide unlocks your full yield potential because it controls those tough weeds other products are missing. And when applied pre-emergent and at a full labeled use rate, replicated Syngenta and University trials show Acuron out-yields competitors by 5 to 15 bushels an acre.
Excellent, Steve. Thank you. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try the online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me. We're getting ready for a conversation with Sam Hudson from Corn Belt Marketing.
That's right.
But first, we need to get to that livestock news, Davis.
Well, Chip, Friday's cattle on feed report was slightly negative compared to trade expectations, but not enough to generate downside price momentum. February live cattle were 20 cents lower today at 116.52 and a half. April cattle firmed 142 and a half cents. Excuse me, firmed 42 and one half cents to 122.95. March feeders shrugged off the rally in corn and closed just 30 cents lower. 143.85. And on your snout side, recent strength in pork product prices supported lean hog futures today. February lean hogs were 70 cents higher, 70.62 and one half. April hogs jumped 47 and one half to 76.62 and a half. There you go, pal.
All right. You know, you mentioned April cattle up 42 and a half cents.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound all that impressive, but take a look at it on the daily chart, guys, because we opened lower. We had closed on Friday at 122.52 and a half. We opened this morning at, let's see, what was it? It was 121.75. So we were 45, 50 cents lower on the open, came all the way back, traded through 123 for a short period of time, and then closed above Friday's high, well above Friday's high. It was an impressive move. I'm encouraged by it. No doubt. All right. Thanks, buddy. Let's bring in Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing good, Chip. How you guys doing today? We're getting ready for some winter around here. It hasn't started yet, but they say it's coming.
Yeah. When's it supposed to get over to you?
This morning.
Really?
They were saying that, you know, and some of this dove south and east, and now it's looking like maybe mid-late afternoon we'll finally get something here. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Not up where Davis and I are, but just south of us, they're looking at some hefty snowfall totals coming their way. You know what, though, Sam? It's been a pretty mild winter. If we have to have a couple of storms along the way to get to spring, I think it's probably on our way.
yeah, and, you know, it's amazing how quickly we saw the local narrative change from everyone, you know, whining and complaining about snow and ice coming to, holy smokes, we're going to miss it, and it's too dry.
Just like that. Yep. So we've been talking about the volatility that are in the market, that is in the markets. But, Sam, just how much volatility is there in the markets? You know, take a look at the option volatility for us, and how much volatility really are we dealing with right now?
Well, not quite as much as what we were dealing with here a couple of weeks ago. You know, when we talk about volatility, the first place your mind goes to is price fluctuations. Of course, you know, what we've seen primarily last week and you know, to begin this week again, is that just in that volatility. But when we got past that January 12th Crop Report, typically every time you get past one of those reports, you're going to see that volatility contract a little bit just because the unknown is now known and everybody can now play their cards and play their hand. And, you know, since then we've seen some fallout, and I think it could be due in part to the USDA, maybe giving us a little bit too much too soon with their continued stocks decline, primarily in the corn market here. So I think we'll see an opportunity for those option volatiles to ramp back up as we go into spring, because we're going to approach a Y in the road here at some point if nothing changes on the demand side.
Yeah. Well, you know, according to USDA, things did change on the demand side. They took quite a bit of demand out of the usage side of the corn balance sheet. If we start to slip some of that back in there, Sam, and we tighten up that carryover estimate even further, what Jack was saying at the start of the show makes more sense. We should go back up and revisit the highs.
Yeah, and I think it's not really a matter of if, but when. Personally, we saw the scapegoat, on the demand cut, at least from what I was hearing, was kind of a slowdown in inspections, especially compared to soybeans. But, you know, that's per typical seasonal pace. You got soybean inspections, I think, 18% ahead of pace there. Corn was, in the backseat, but it's only because the shipping campaign on beans was so large. And I think now we're going to probably see those two trade places a little bit. It may take a few weeks longer this year because we've got a later harvest in parts of South America because of a later planting. And I think thereafter we should see this corn market maybe be a little bit more impressive unless something changes politically or with, COVID or swine flu or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the volatility. Volatility, it can be kind of a pain in the butt just because it creates some unpredictability in the markets, but it also provides some opportunities. And it's not just for speculators. Farmers can use it too, can't they?
They absolutely can. And I think, you know, the caveat to that and the disclaimer you got to put on that is that just because there is volatility doesn't mean you have to be a participant at all times. You can kind
Good
of,
point.
You can still play your hand. You know, it's kind of like Texas Hold'em. I mean, sometimes you don't know if you really want to play that hand until later on in the hand itself. And I think that's what we're getting into in these grain markets. I mentioned that Y in the road. You know, what the USDA has done here on this last report on January 12th was necessitate the U.S., you know, this Northern Hemisphere in general growing season. And I think if the South American weather gets behind us a little bit, maybe we've seen the worst there. I think it's going to usher in more narrative about what's going to happen here.
That is such a great point that just because opportunity is there doesn't mean that you need to be actively involved in it all the time. Doesn't mean that you take a day off of marketing.
You need to completely reshape that either. I mean, a lot of people ask, what do you do when it gets this volatile? Well, I try to stay boring, if I'm honest. You try to look at some of the spreads, try to look at some of the other things that you know don't offer so much volatility so you can kind of keep yourself grounded. And then when those opportunities come out of the woodwork, you can be ready to strike on that.
Man, that's good. That's really good. Anything else?
I'm going to say volatility with this crop insurance is going to become a factor. And unfortunately, that could be a negative one. If we keep these wide price swings, you could see that, you know, ultimately increase the price of the, what those policies might cost. But, you know, it also protects you from some of that volatility and allows you to, you know, secure yourself to a certain degree. And then, like I said, take advantage of that volatility strikes again down the road because we don't have rain or something like that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Are you hearing any other messages from the what's happening in the options trade? Anything that you're watching there?
You know, I think we finally got out, you know, with this break, maybe we finally gotten out of that mentality that, you know, we go up until we don't. If not for nothing, if this break scared a guy, you know, use it as a warning shot for a call to action, because when you look at the values we're still out here today, you know, if that's something you don't want to take less than that, there's, you know, the tools available to be able to do that. But when you talk, you know, again, going back to that volatility, you can't really capitalize. If we get volatile this summer, you can't capitalize unless you leave yourself an open door. And I think those doors that you don't absolutely want closed, leave them open.
Okay, expand on that a little bit, Sam. So if you want to maintain some upside price potential in here, you need to you're going to need to use futures or options to do that if you're selling into this thing.
you're going to need to do that one way or the other, and maybe that's just buying just the put option altogether. But again, this feeds back to this crop insurance narrative, and I don't know where we end up, but I've been having these discussions. Well, if you're at 450 base price, the way our APHs here in central Illinois have improved and as dry as it is, you know, that creates a 427.5 you know, floor price if you can buy one of these products, you know, to get up to a 95% coverage level. And if you're not going to do that, when you look at the price differential on your trigger point, from 95 to 85 in itself, you jump from 427 down to 382 per bushel. And to me, if you're not going to buy up on 95% in a situation like that, you might as well buy 80 and just defend yourself between where the price is and where that trigger is. And that leaves you that open door for higher prices at the end of the year, because the only way 450 price looks bad is if you raise 150 bushel instead of 250.
Some people aren't going to like to hear that about the, if you're not going to buy up, you might as well buy down. But you're absolutely right on that, Sam. You're spot on.
Well, I mean, if you're going to save your money on the insurance, you know, maybe you can use that in the options. Maybe that becomes your play. But keep in mind that insurance not only becomes a put option on price, but it becomes that call option later if you don't raise it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, we're getting close to the end of this segment, but I do want to know, when we talk about what's going on in this bean market right now, I mean, are you looking at the same kind of volatility issues as what we just talked about on corn?
In essence, yes, when you look at the base price and how big of a jump you take from, you know, just a 10% change. And, and there again, remember, this is all very specific. I mean, if you're in Nebraska and you're all irrigated, it's a different conversation. But in a lot of these areas, we've seen, like I said, we've seen those APHs, you're ratcheted up. Some of these, in some cases, you're starting to kick out some of these 2012 type yields. And there again, you just got to look at the dollars per acre. In some of these cases, you're able to assure yourself of $1,000 an acre before you even put a seed in the ground.
Right, which is really cool if we can do that. Okay, we are talking with Sam Hudson from Corn Belt Marketing over in Illinois. Okay, when we come back, I want to do more looking forward when we come back, Sam. What are you going to be watching most closely as you try to figure out what the markets are going to be doing? And then let's talk about these demand issues. Are we really going to ship all those soybeans? It's a big question on everybody's mind. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Ukraine's economy ministry raises its corn production and export forecasts. And then later in the day, there were rumors that Ukraine was going to be putting a cap on their exports. Russian wheat export prices eased, down $2 from the previous week. Demand for wheat at Chinese auctions is on the rise. 99.9% of the total offered at the latest auction was sold. The Wall Street Journal reports China pushes for high-level meetings to ease tensions with U.S. The U.S. reaffirms Taiwan support after China sends in warplanes. Texas sues to overturn Biden's deportation halt, and South Korea's bird flu nears 22 million birds culled. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. You are never to go anywhere without these sunglasses ever again. You are shades. You are shades.
Oh, yeah? Well, I am Spartacus. That news feature from Farm Journal, that's, I mean, it's only started here in the last couple of weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah. From what I hear, it's a smash. People love it.
Oh, really?
They can't get enough of it. Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
You now text it's news to 31313.
Okay.
And it or if is... you speak Davis, yes. It's 31313.
Gotcha.
Text news.
But it's the top news stories from AgWeb. It's the top stories from Ag Day, from Ag Day, from U.S. Farm Report, and of course from AgriTalk. So,
which means if you get lucky, you could get a dose of Chip Flory and a dose of Tyne Morgan in the same shot. It's possible.
That's too much to handle right there.
You know, if you got a sweet tooth, I'm saying, text news to 31313.
Let's recap how the market's closed.
July, hard red winter wheat, 12.5 cents higher, 6.29 1/4. July, soft red up 9 3/4 to 6.33 3/4. March corn futures, 11 cents higher, 5.11 1/2. May corn, 11 1/4 cents higher, 5.14 1/4. March soybean futures, 31 3/4 cents higher today at 13.43 1/2. May beans surged 31 cents to 13.42 3/4. March cotton, 77 points higher, 82.33. On the livestock side, February live cattle were 20 cents lower, 116.52 1/2. March feeder cattle, 30 cents lower, 143.85. Could have been much, much worse from what I hear. And February lean hogs, 70 cents higher, 70.62 1/2. That's your quick market recap. Back to you, buddy.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing, is our guest today. Sam, I want to talk about export demand on soybeans and where it might be leading us down the road here. But first, let's talk about some of these fund positions. On corn, the chatter is that after Friday's sell-off, the fund long positions were probably close to about 300,000 contracts. You think that's about right?
The estimate I've seen is around 285 going home after Friday.
Okay.
I would say that's probably somewhere in the ballpark. Probably seems about right.
Okay. What kind of condition does that leave the corn market in for spec activity?
Well, I think it might continue to be what it has been, and that is a follower of beans, you know. And then, you know, what was interesting about the corn is it got its own story here after this most recent report and sucked even more longs in. And, you know, now we need kind of a continual bull story to, I guess, keep the thought process alive that we're going to go through the highs here before we, you know, put a seed in the ground here in the U.S. or talk about weather or what have you.
Okay. All right. This bean story then, similar line of questions. What's the fund positioning? Tell us about the next 30 days.
The fund position on beans is going to be a little bit more optimistic, I think. I mean, when we were going home last Tuesday, would they have their position around 135,000, 140,000 contracts, estimated to be around 80,000 going home Friday. That's a sustainable position to me. And when you look at the, you know, the fundamentals we've got at hand, you know, I'll go back to the corn. I'll really be interested to see where we're at there come Friday afternoon to see if we're still, you know, kind of ahead of our skis there or not.
Okay. Anything in the wheat when you look at the funds and how they're positioned or how anything is any of the players are positioned that we need to be aware of?
You know, the wheat, if we build up a short position there again, I think it's something to watch because it's just going to be been caught in the middle this whole time. If you build up a short position there and you still have Russia talking about export restrictions, you know, what really matters there is where we're going to be this summer, though. You know, they're going to insulate and protect themselves as long as they can for as long as they feel like they need to. But if weather straightens out, they may not need to do that, and you could kind of see, just like we've seen in all boats rise in high water, you see all boats, you know, drop in low water if the tide goes out later on down the road. And I think a lot of this, even on the bean inspection side of things, could hinge on what our early U.S. Weather season looks like.
Okay. All right. So over to the bean demand. Inspections right now running like 79% ahead a year ago. Last week we were about 78%, so we're widening that just a bit. Man, it's just an impressive effort that we've got going on in bean shipments right now.
It is. And, you know, we've talked about volatility. I mean, that seems to be, it gets all the headlines, but volatility essentially means uncertainty. And when people ask, are we going to ship all those beans? Just like you asked, I really don't know. If our weather looks like it's off to a good start, though, and they feel like they've stocked up enough, it's possible they wait until new crop and we don't necessarily lose that demand, but, you know, kick it out to next year a little bit. So that's one of those things you don't find out until you get to this summer. And when you think about it, you know, if we start to slow that rate down, guess what? I mean, there's room to give something here because if we stay on the current pace, we're going to be 234 million bushels beyond where the USDA got us written down at, and the carryout's at 140.
Right. Obviously, can't happen. What slows it down? What pushes? I'm not seeing it right now. Exactly what's going to, well, the arrival of that South American crop is what's going to slow it down, but we're a few weeks away from that happening.
Yeah, and a few weeks longer than normal, as we mentioned a couple right. times here with the late planting. Yes. You know, you're going to be mid to late February, early March before you probably see that big. And that's what's going to help, you know, this corn inspection campaign here down the road, I think. So, you know, it's going to come down to the nitty-gritty in terms of what our bean carryout is going to look like June, July, August. That's obviously the, you know, million-dollar question here. And I just don't think you're going to know for a while. So the safety in that in the short term is that they probably can't pull away from any of these commitments, at least for now either. So we probably got a month and a half here where we should see maybe a wide-ranging, continue to be volatile market. But I think we find some contentment still in these elevated prices.
Okay. All right. The overall Chinese appetite for feed, for protein, are you hearing any messages come from their wheat auctions about their overall demand for feed right now? Because to me, they've got to be buying wheat out of the state-owned reserves to put into feed rations with the amount of wheat that they're buying right now.
Yeah, and that was, you know, some of the news here this morning. I think it was around maybe just shy or almost close to 4 million metric tons. But, yeah, I think the percentage sold here in this wheat and the price it was sold at is you know, what I'm impressed by. And, you know, I think it was like 99.8% or something like that. And there was a price of like $10.30 a bushel. And when you look at historically, I guess I got to go back and look a little bit more. But I think historically they were only selling, you know, in the upper teens as a percentage every, you know, week on week, you know, even 6
Yeah, that was four or five, 6 weeks ago, Sam. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you see stuff like that happening and just this general need still for protein, it just feels like we're somewhat safe and at these elevated levels, at least for the time being. And going back to those bean export inspections, you know, I think we added up almost 80 million bushels in revisions, you know, yeah. since the start of the marketing year. That is a big yeah. number.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to rail on USDA and get it over to the Foreign Ag Service.
Well, we can do that if you want.
Well, can we? but good grief, these weekly revisions that we're getting on the soybean export inspections, they're big numbers. It's not like we missed half a boat. We're talking multiple boats that they've missed on loadings. I don't get it. It's frustrating. Very frustrating. I wish we had more timely information, more accurate information in a timely manner to make some of these decisions on, and several items at USDA we need to look at right now. Just no question about it. No question. Back to the feed value, Sam, because it seems like, yes, soybeans, obviously it's an important factor feature in the entire grain markets, but it's this feed value and the product going into China, Japan, Colombia that is really impressive.
Well, and what's really interesting about it too is, you know, let's even zoom out even further and think of where we could be in 2-3 years. You know, we're planting the lowest amount of wheat acres we have in over 100 years here, and no one's had a need to come after our carryout. You know, there's been a couple times over the last 4 or 5 years we thought, well, maybe, you know, we need kind of a compounded issue with Australia and Black Sea, you know, wheat. And here we had, you know, Chicago wheat kind of sniffing around at $7 a bushel here last week, and you got almost a 40% stocks to usage ratio. So if that starts to slip and the wheat's got to take off, it's just really hard to be negative, you know, the neighboring markets as well.
Right. Okay. If you've been patient to this point on 2021 crop, stay that way.
You know, you're starting to get to that point, and there, here again, I'll tie this back to this insurance, because we're going to start setting that base price soon. That ties into some of these decisions in a big way, I think, this year, in terms of how aggressive a guy gets out there and just how things are standing in general. You know, we talk about the drought situation as well. In general, we've advised it to be about 10% out there, depending on the person. If you know storage, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a different play. But I really think that that option route is going to be a valuable you know, way to approach things as we head into this spring. And then when, you know, come June, by that time, you're going to have a better idea what it looks like on your individual farm and can just start making those more aggressive decisions at that point.
Yep. Leave the doors open. Leave the doors open, right?
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Love it. Love it, Sam. Good work, man. It's always fun to talk with you.
Love having it.
All right. Guys.
Thank you.
Be safe over there with the storm.
We will. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right, that's Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing. you know, maintain your flexibility, keep the doors open, however you want to say it. It's become a reoccurring theme on the show. And it, I mean, we've been talking about it now for, Davis, 2 months at least.
At least.
Probably longer than that. Yeah. Don't paint yourself into a corner on these markets. You don't want to do that. Keep the doors open. Maintain your flexibility. Okay, Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory, up next, right here on AgriTalk.
Oh. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us.
Yes, I got to bust in here. Okay. I've got some breaking news from Agra Action News team. We've heard from Farmer Bob Northwest Mo. He was busy putting the snowblower on. Apparently he's all right, although I would recommend Bob get to the barrel. Get to the barrel. Now back to you.
It's barreling through the Midwest. There we go. All right. Welcome back. It's Monday afternoon. That means it's time for our conversation with Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. How you doing, Kerry? It's good to talk with you.
You too, Chip. Thanks for having me again. I'm doing great.
Absolutely. Good, good, good. Okay, let's kick it off. What you got going in soybeans?
Yeah, March soybeans. We backed off in a big way last week. We closed back below 1370 half, which was a big area that we closed above a couple of weeks ago. At that point, I was expecting bullish continuation into the 1660s within several months, 3 to 5 months. Now, there's a big question as whether this is going to be a washout back to the downside, back to long-term support at 1137 half. So I'm saying that if we continue placing weekly settlements below 1370 half, you should allow for 1137 half. There's no clear indication of that, no real sell signal per se. It's just that we drove up so fast, so hard up into this area. It took us 5 weeks to get from 1135 up into the 1400 area that we could quite easily give that back within 5 weeks. So 1137 half, not out of the question between now and say early March. On the way down, I do have respectable support at 1231 and a quarter, where we could get a nice 2 to 3 week bounce, closing below 1231 and a quarter, which is possible over the next week or two, that 1137 half becomes indicated. And 1137 half, by the way, is a long-term support level. It is a five-year channel top that we settled above a few months ago, and holding above it actually maintains a constructive dynamic broader market into later year for the soybean market. So that just should be mentioned that despite the fact that we might sell off over the next 5 weeks or so, that is a good bottom picking zone to 1137 half. In fact, if we close Friday back above 1370 half, I'm back to expecting 1660 and a quarter as a spring summer high. So 1370 half, big pivot point here into March trade, below which 1137 half in reach, above which we're back into the bullish camp, 1660 and a quarter in reach as a spring summer high. On to March wheat. We closed 649 even today. Talking big picture with regard to the broader wheat market, I've been bullish for months now above 592 and three quarter. That is well below the market right now, but I'm mentioning that because that sort of represents a long-term saucer bottom that's been playing out for several years in the broader wheat market. And in fact, holding above 592 and three quarter, I think 861 half, not out of the question as a spring summer target. We do need price acceleration for that to actually occur over that time horizon. And that would occur if we close this week, Friday, above 702 and a quarter. So 702 and a quarter can contain buying through February, and we could back off to that 592 and three quarter level within 3 to 5 weeks of that. But closing above 702 and a quarter, price acceleration, bullish momentum really picks up. And I think we're just 2 to 3 months away then from 861 half, where the broader wheat market can place a 2021 high. Okay. I should talk downside, and I'll leave you with this with regard to the wheat market itself. If we were to close any week below 592 and three quarter, and I don't see that happening this week, but if so, then 475 becomes a realistic 3 to 5 month downside target. But that's kind of irrelevant right now. bullish wheat into later year above 592 and three quarter, 861 half, big picture target. And finally, April live cattle, we push just above a significant resistance area that this week is at 121.80, but we didn't close above it by that 1% margin that I like to see. That's 123.02 this week. So if on Friday, April live cattle closes above 123.02, we are in a significant secondary sign of strength that should play out into spring. I then have a 3 to 5 month upside objective in the 136 to 138 area where the market encounters its next long-term resistance area that can contain annual buying pressures. Downside, if this market closes below 123.02 and certainly below 121.80 at the end of this week, it remains susceptible to falling back into the 108 handle over the next few months where we could bottom out through spring. So 121.80 is downside pivot point in live cattle. And if we can close above 123.02, we're off to the races, April live cattle into later contract life. And that's really all I've got for you this week, Chip.
All right, Kerry. Sounds good, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you with you again soon.
Thank you, sir.
Hey. Don't forget. Oh. Everybody, Kerry's got a video of what we just talked about at artacadvisory.com, artacadvisory.com. I didn't want to forget that. Thank you, Kerry.
I do appreciate that. Take care now.
You bet. All right. Real quick, the cold storage report was out, Davis. Just ahead of the start of the show.
How'd we do?
USDA reports there were 534.3 million pounds of beef in frozen storage as of December 31. That was a 22.84 million pound increase from November, which was a considerably bigger increase than what we normally see at this time of the year. So that might be a little bit negative. Now, December pork stocks were down 11.39 million pounds from November, totaled 408.36 million pounds. The five-year average drop from November to December is 13.4. We got an 11.4. So maybe just a little bit positive there. 1.09 billion pounds of frozen poultry in U.S. commercial storage at the end of December. A 1.1% rise from the end of November, but a 10.2% drop from the same time last year. Real quick, on the National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook, this is for January 31st through February 4th. We've got above normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt with above normal precipitation the 8 to 14 day for February 2nd through the 8th. Above normal temperatures expected in the eastern belt. Normal temperatures expected in the northwestern and western production areas. But boy, above normal precipitation expected over the entire Corn Belt for the 8 to 14 day forecast, dude. There's some people that are saying, boy, it sure be nice to get that moisture in here if we can get it in here right now. All right. For Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, we're talking carbon. We're talking about capturing it and getting paid for it. And we're getting an update on SCN tomorrow morning on AgriTalk. Thanks, Dak. You're on Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.